Let's Talk About is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Propaganda is a very strange concept for a lot of people. A lot of you hear that word and you think of the "We Want You" type poster that, you know, that is often printed and lampooned and spoofed in popular media. Or you're thinking about maybe leaflets dropped out of airplanes or things shouted over loudspeakers. The idea of propaganda goes so much deeper. I actually have a piece sitting right above my desk right now. It's a poster that says, "Is your bathroom breeding Bolsheviks?" And it's about it's a fake ad for a toilet paper company saying that better toilet paper will make your workers more happy at work and make them not want to become communists. And it's things like that that we kind of think of as propaganda. But it goes a lot deeper than that, and that's something I want to talk about on this episode today. Last year I did my War Stories series around Remembrance Day. This year has been a little bit different, obviously. And the thing that kind of tipped me off to this is the fact that on Friday, actually, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War comes out. And actually, as of recording this, tomorrow, when the show comes out, I'll be able to preload the game onto my PC so I can play it at midnight on Thursday. But it really, because the game takes place in the Cold War, and because video games, and specifically Call of Duty, has had such a strange relationship with, especially in Canada, Remembrance Day, I wanted to talk about this. For a long time, Memorial Day and Remembrance Day were the days around the time when the Call of Duty games would come out. And it was a weird little bit of cognitive dissonance. This day where, or these days, if you're listening in the U.S., these days where we mark out to remember the horrors of war and the sacrifices people made to help keep our countries safe and help keep other countries safe. But at the same time, these video games where you're able to take control of fictionalized characters in these video games, whether it's a Call of Duty World at War and you're an American fighting the Japanese or a Russian fighting the Germans, or Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 where you're fighting random quote-unquote Russians, it really has been this gamified experience of the horrors of war, and it's become this kind of like action movie thing. If you've played any of the last like 10 Call of Duties, you'll know that it's not like any realistic portrayal of war, as gory as some of the games might get. But it always struck me that they came out around Remembrance Day, particularly being Canadian. And in the last few years, we've seen more and more of a discussion around propaganda, military propaganda in video games. For a long time, it's been kind of the standard in movies. You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has, and Marvel and Disney particularly, have a very close relationship with the American military. They allow them to use military insignias, military bases, military hardware in their films, as long as the military is treated with respect. They actually have consultants and advisors in the military that their job is literally to go onto movie sets, you know, whether it's Bad Boys 2 or, you know, Captain Marvel or Bright or whatever. Their job is to go onto these movie sets and work, you know, and throughout the creative process, work with the directors, writers, producers to make sure that the American military is shown in a positive light. And that doesn't mean that, you know, movies can't show the military doing bad things or being somewhat incompetent or whatever. They don't have to show them being the rah-rah hero. You know, people often think of the glorification that Michael Bay gives the American military in a lot of his movies, where the heroes, they're either Joe Lunchpail, this average guy, or they are some Spec Ops Army Ranger type who, you know, you get this final, I think of Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen, and there's this huge battle scene where you've got the military guys with M4s and M1 Abrams tanks squaring off against Decepticons, and it's less of a Transformers movie and it's more of a military movie at that point. But even like smaller things, just like the way that the Air Force is treated in Captain Marvel, where they talking about you know, the gender roles and the glass ceiling and then the military, and the movie's not really about the U.S. Air Force, but the U.S. Air Force does play a role. They had advisors there, and there's a monetary stake in these movies. And something really recently we saw, there was actually an article here by James McMahon of The Independent talking about the U.S. military using video games and esports to recruit. So, full transparency, first off, I'm a gamer. I play video games. I said at the top of the show that I'm excited for Call of Duty Cold War to come out, and I'm getting ready to play it the second it drops, which I haven't done in a very long time. I actually haven't played a video game on release day in a very long time. And I also watch esports. I watched every single Call of Duty League event this year, even when they moved online, and I wasn't very happy with the quality of the production. But a main component, a major sponsor of the Call of Duty League was the U.S. Army. Every commercial break, there'd be ad reads for the American military. There would be ads playing for the American military. I think there was a sponsored award given out at one event. There were advertisements for the U.S. military all over when the events were held in person. In the arenas where they were playing. And there was a U.S. Army Twitch channel and an esports team. Not dissimilar to the... Actually, it's not similar at all. You know, the Army College and the Air Force College and the Navy College have NCAA teams, which effectively work as propaganda tools and advertisements, because some of those teams are very good. And it's a little bit different when the military themselves is ponying up the money to put these ads out there. And actually, a cool fact that I learned a few years ago was that when, at least in the U.S., I don't know if it's the same in Canada, at sporting events, like at a hockey game, if you're at a Dallas Stars game and a few Marines come out and they hold the flag, and they, you know, they get the pump up rah-rah and they're announced their name, their rank, their regiment, and all of this is announced. The U.S. Army actually pays for that. The Department of Defense pays the teams for that. It's basically paying for ad space. because the teams don't have to do that. They're not obligated to do that, and they're making money off of it. So we're in this really weird world where propaganda is not what we think it is. Here's a bit of a definition for you. So common tactics in propaganda used by either side include using selective stories to come over as wide covering and objective, partial facts or historical context, reinforcing reasons or motivations to act due to threats on the security of the individual. You think of, I had the episode on the man that killed 100,000, dropping of the nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The reinforcement that the U.S. was right to do that was the lives that would have been lost if the war would have continued. So the lives lost in the bombings outweighed the lives that would have been lost if the U.S. would have kept their campaign going. So next, narrow source of experts to provide insight into the situation, demonizing the enemy who does not picture the picture of what is right, and using a narrow range of discourse whereby judgments are often made while the boundary of discourse itself or the framework within which the opinions are formed are not discussed. These last two are the most important ones. When people talk about military propaganda and media, they often talk about the creation of the other and demonizing of the enemy. And for a long time, video games have been wishy-washy, and this has good and bad implications. There was actually an extreme controversy that arose in 2010 with Medal of Honor, the Medal of Honor remake. So Medal of Honor is one of the longest running and one of the original military first-person shooters. It came out in the early 2000s, or you know, like 1999, early 2000s. And in 2010, capitalizing off of the modernization trend that military first-person shooters have been going through after the surprise success of Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, Medal of Honor rebranded and reworked and released a game in 2010 simply called Medal of Honor that took the conflict forward. So took it away from World War II, where the series had been for about a decade, and moved it into the modern day. And one of the major controversies was they said the developers, EA, said that they were not going to be afraid to tell it like it is, basically. You actually were fighting the Taliban and in this game, literally in dialogue. I actually played this game about a month ago, again, just because of curiosity, because I haven't played it in a long time. And yeah, they will call enemies Taliban, and that's the whole thing. And it actually takes place in some very real situations in the war on terror that were going on. And the controversy arose when the multiplayer came out and people realized that you would be able to play as the Taliban in the multiplayer, because the actual factions were called U.S. Army and, or I think it was Tier 1 and Taliban. I actually played the multiplayer. It was a good multiplayer. It was a lot of fun. I was good at it, but didn't last very long. And they actually had to change, after the controversy, they changed the name to Op 4. And this follows a long trend stretching all the way back to Counter-Strike, which is counter-terrorists versus terrorists. And the terrorist side is called the opposing force. They're these guys that their arms are white and they wear balaclavas and kind of street clothes. Moving forward throughout video games, like Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, again, Op 4, called them the opposing force. Didn't call them, there's just this vague Middle Eastern group. And they wore red berets, they wore scarves, they wore, again, balaclavas. And moving forward, like, that has been the trend. When you haven't been fighting Russians or Korean, like North Koreans or Chinese or, you know, random space enemy number 23, you were fighting these others, these just vague Middle Eastern enemies. And this is where that part of the definition of demonizing the enemy in narrow range of discourse comes through. You're essentially broadening the category of who is the enemy. By not naming them, you're skirting around the issue of of celebrating, and you're skirting around the issue of personifying. So actually giving people, you know, the potential to play as the Taliban or Al-Qaeda and live through their shoes. But in effect, you are also creating this broad term, this broad, like, kind of this wide covering definition of opposing force that's anybody that looks vaguely Middle Eastern. And this whole discussion actually continued on up until the latest Call of Duty in 2019. Infinity Ward, the developers, consistently said, and there's actually a great documentary on YouTube about this, I'll leave it in the show notes, where they said, and they were asked repeatedly by journalists, is this game going to be political? And Infinity Ward insisted, this game is not political. It's not political. You're just a soldier doing their job. We're not making any, you know, being political means we're going to try and make a statement about, like, current administrations and things like that, when that kind of flies in the face of the exact idea of being political. By doing nothing, they are doing something. And if you've played that game, it is inherently political. It is inherently bringing up serious discussions about the lengths that our militaries are willing to go. There's this concept in the game about gray areas and about crossing that line. You know, the main character is told by Captain Price that, you know, you have to figure out where your line is and if you're willing to cross it. The game gives you, there's actually a technically a brilliant scene, just on a technical level, of how they were able to develop the AI to work in this scenario. As a former, you know, wannabe game developer and somebody that's interested in programming, it was exemplary for me to watch and read about this. But it's a mission called Clean House or Clear House, I can't remember what the exact name is, where you are in a, you're basically going through with your team of operators and you're sweeping through a London flat. And you are clearing rooms, you're shooting basically what are members of this family. And it's a very real scenario that people have had to go through, military members have had to go through. And by not making a statement, what Infinity Ward is basically saying is that by not coming out and making a statement and calling out a particular group or particular administration, they're not making a statement. They're not being political. Anybody who knows anything about discourse and knows that, you know, being complicit doesn't make you apolitical. It just means you're not choosing a side is also choosing a side. You're choosing the side of the establishment, of the status quo. It would have been bigger for them to make a stand and go against the status quo, and actually there are points where they discuss this idea of, like, going too far and what we're not willing to do, and in some instances they leave that up to the player to decide what they're not willing to do. There are full sections of the game where you can say no and not take part and let it just go on without you, and you join it after everything's gone on. So essentially they are making a statement, and by not going out and making a statement, they're saying that the status quo is all right. That what we're going through is all right. And this is the propaganda angle of it. Propaganda doesn't have to be somebody shouting in your face that you need to join the military. And I have the utmost respect for the military. I wanted to join the military when I was younger. I read lots of books on military history, and I actually read about, I've been reading a lot about the War on Terror recently, because it's just been something that I've been interested in. And propaganda doesn't have to be somebody shouting in your face to join the military or to go shoot terrorists. It is anything that can cause someone to be persuaded. And as an addictions, somebody who's researched links between gaming and addictions, one of the biggest tools one of the biggest, I guess, variables or impacts that people have on becoming addicted to something is sustained attention and retention in an activity. The longer you do something, the more it becomes a habit. And if it is done in an unhealthy degree, it is technically an addiction. And people, relatively, the emerging adult population, people 18 to 24, also a main target for militaries around the world, one of the major ways you create retention in an activity is by harnessing enhancement motivations. Harnessing, you know, people doing things for fun because they get a rush, because it's enjoyable, because it makes them feel good. You give them that rush and they get retention. They stick with the thing that they're doing, and the more they are subjected to this thing, the more they understand it, and the more they are willing to follow along with it. And that is becoming a major issue. I talked last year about video game violence. Literally the last time I talked this much in depth about video games was talking about video game violence and school shootings, and I talked about the idea of priming. And the idea that subjecting somebody short-term to violent media can prime them for violent behavior. And what psychologists have found is that priming lasts maybe half an hour, 45 minutes. So the difference here, for those who have listened to that episode or will go listen to that episode now and are listening to this one, the difference is the retention and the sustained time. And also, there's a stark difference. I should say this. There is a stark difference between joining the military and committing extremely violent acts and taking lives. One goes against so much human programming that it takes a lot of external factors working in concert with one another to push somebody to do that. Pushing somebody to join the military is a lot easier because we have already been subjected to the conditions and the ideas and the values that make that transition easier. You know, patriotism, a celebration of the military, reverence for military service, tying military successes to our national history and our national identity. You know, every Canadian grows up knowing about Vimy Ridge, Battle of Passchendaele, Juno Beach. Like, these are things, you know, everybody stops on Remembrance Day for a moment of silence, and that is a great celebration of the military, but it also, for better or for worse, links the military to our national identity and gives a sustained discursive change to the way our society operates. And the military is actually, not the Canadian military, but the American military is actually, as we've discussed, using this to their advantage. I talked about esports and the Call of Duty League. There's also a game called America's Army, and this is from an article in The Atlantic. I'll tell you the author in a second because I've scrolled down here. While thorough in his history of military games development, Meade forgoes a robust account of game criticism. Take his discussion of America's Army. America's Army was built using commercial software. It was created on the engine of Epic Games' Unreal, modeled after culturally pervasive first-person shooters. Its first iteration released in 2002 and is available to the public for free. Meade tells us that as America's Army was used explicitly as a recruitment tool aimed at young teenagers, it could be viewed as propaganda or as an army intrusion into the home, but he never develops these thoughts. This is a very important point here, and I'm running out of time, but this is Hamza Shaban from The Atlantic, and the article is Playing War, How the Military Uses Video Games. I'll also leave it in the show notes. This intrusion into the home and use of a recruitment tool to recruit teenagers. As I mentioned, retention is created by enjoyment, and enjoyment and retention causes systemic changes in behavior and in belief. So what happens with video games is we know video games are pervasive in homes around the world. 27 million people play video games, plus. You know, it's a massive billion-dollar industry. People play Call of Duty. I'm going to be playing Call of Duty at the end of this week. I actually was playing Call of Duty yesterday with my friends. It's a part of the experience that people have, and teenagers have. So when the Army comes out and gives them a free game that is like the games they've already played and is fun enough to keep them retained, they can be subjected to this messaging, these advertisements, this rationale of Army valor. And that in and of itself can be propaganda. We live in an age of propaganda. It is everywhere. You can drive down the street. Actually, there are ads for the Canadian Armed Forces on TV every single day. And while that is an upfront and in-your-face piece of propaganda, it is still propaganda. Propaganda doesn't have to be done to sway the enemy to join your side. It can be swayed for you to entrench yourself even more in your side. And if you're going to take anything away from this episode, I think it is this. Video games and media are fun. I love them. I play video games all the time. I love military movies. We need to be cognizant of the messaging we receive. There's nothing wrong with joining the military. There is nothing wrong with serving your country. I want to do the best for my country that I possibly can. And I want you to be cognizant. This is nothing to particularly act on. This is not an episode where I'm telling you to go out and do something and react and change things. It's to be cognizant that a lot of the messaging we receive is A, unintentional, and B, by definition, subversive. I don't think there's anything wrong particularly with the military being involved and funding things and trying to recruit. It's their job. It's what they do. They give people opportunities that they may not otherwise have had. It is when it is done disingenuously when I have a problem with it. And I want us to be aware of the fact that this does happen, and that even something as simple as the new Call of Duty can technically be propaganda, because it changes how we view the military. And that is something we really need to pay attention to. And that is going to do it here for me today. This has been Let's Talk About. I've been Jason. You have been the audience. Thank you very, very much for listening. If you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, you have got some music and some great shows coming up after this one. So stay tuned. Keep that dial on 101.5 UMFM. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very, very much for your download. Leave a rate. Share it with friends. Help spread this podcast even further than it started to already spread. That means the world to me. So thank you very, very much for listening. This has been Let's Talk About, and have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Happy Remembrance Day, everybody. Oh, also, don't put up your Christmas stuff until after November 11th if you're living in Canada, please. Just, please. And wear a mask. Wear a mask. That's all. It's not a political statement. It should just be common sense at this point. Wear a mask.